Rosh Hashanah Daf Chaf Aleph. We are starting on Chaf Amud Beis, towards the top of the Amud, a continuation of the discussion regarding Rosh Chodesh, and based in instituting and determining when Rosh Chodesh is going to be. As per the Mishnayos and the Gemaras, the sense that we get is that Eidim are going to come, testify that they saw the new moon, and as a result of that, Beis Din is going to be Mekayesh Rosh Chodesh. Also, as we've discussed already on a number of different occasions, and yesterday we spent a lot of time discussing, so there are two possible days which could become Rosh Chodesh. Either it'll be the 30th day of the previous month or the 31st. The simple reading of the Gemara is that this will be determined by when the Eidim come into Beis Din and actually testifying when they saw the new moon. More details about the new moon coming up in just a little bit. In the meantime, however, as we already discussed previously, there's also a molad to consider, and we're going to be discussing the molad as well. Yesterday, we went over the idea that Beis Din can go ahead and, based on various considerations that we discussed yesterday and 2 days ago, so Beis Din can go ahead and manipulate the month and actually declare to be Rosh Chodesh, even if the Eidim are telling us that the moon was witnessed on a different day. So this goes back to yesterday's daf, and we discussed a number of shitas in terms of to what degree, how much ability does Beis Din have to manipulate when Rosh Chodesh is going to be. Good, and then we get to the top of Chaf Amud Beis, where pretty much this is where we left off yesterday, and that is the idea that there is something called the Sod HaIbor, a series of brisos, collection of brisos that speak about the institution of the Molad and Rosh Chodesh, and Sod HaIbor literally translates as the secret of the Ibor, of how to establish the calendar. And we do not have it in its totality. All we have are various excerpts that are quoted by our Gemara. The Gemara yesterday quoted a line from Sod HaIbor, wanted to know if Shmuel would be able to interpret exactly what was said in Sod HaIbor, and Shmuel admitted that he was unclear as to what the intention was of this statement from Sod HaIbor. Good. Which brings us to where we are right now. And Kisalik Rebbe Zera. Kisalik Rebbe Zera is about 8 lines from the top of the Amud. And we are about to get involved in the discussion regarding the Molad and Rosh Chodesh. So, just as a very brief introduction, first let's talk a little bit about the Molad. So we've discussed this already in the past, but this is really we're going to be discussing it principally, and that is the idea that there is a point in time where we have a Molad. Molad literally means birth, but in the context of the moon, so it's a description of the conjunction. And that means to say that when you have an alignment between the earth, the moon, and the sun, specifically in that order, so the entire dark side of the moon now is facing us. So this is a description of the molad. This is a point of conjunction. So this point of conjunction is operating now on a schedule. Every 29 days, 12 hours, and approximately 43 minutes, we go from one molad to another molad. To be a little bit more specific and a little more accurate, so it's 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 halakim. The hour back in the day, in the good old days, was divided into 1,080 parts. And so 793 parts of 1,080, or otherwise stated, 793 over 1,080. So that is the number of fractions of an hour in which you have the molad. Or let's put it in other words, the molad is going to be 29 days, 12 hours, and 793 over 1,080. Good. And you do this now month after month, and this will be the point of conjunction. In fact, the molad was just announced over the Shabbos in terms of when the molad for Kislev is going to be. And if you want to know what next month's molad is, so just simply add 29 days, 12 hours, 793 halakim. And you could do that going forward, you could do that going backwards, and you can do this all the way going back to Maaseh Bereishis, as we've already discussed in the past as well. Good. So this is the idea behind the molad. Obviously, at the point of molad, so we're talking now at a perfect alignment. And even as I say perfect alignment, we understand that it's not perfectly aligned. Had it been perfectly aligned, so then there would be a solar eclipse every molad. The moon would be obstructing the sun every molad. Obviously, that doesn't happen because it's not a perfect alignment, because we're not operating on two dimensions, it's three dimensions. But anyway, regardless, so this point of conjunction is what's described as the molad. And the Gemara now is going to be teaching us a number of things regarding the molad. Before we get to the Gemara, again, just some very basic information so that we have a good picture, a good sense of what's going on over here. So in terms of the moon and the earth going around, no, let's do that again. In terms of the moon and the sun going around the earth. So they are both going from east to west. They both rise in the east and they set in the west. Now, everything I'm going to be describing right now is going to be from our perception. Obviously, we operate scientifically with a heliocentric solar system, but nevertheless, for our purposes and our discussion, so we're going to be describing everything just simply how it looks from here on Earth. From here on Earth, so we have two luminaries that are rising in the east and setting in the west. That's the sun and the moon. There are more than two luminaries. There's also all the planets as well and the stars. But in the meantime, however, we are just going to be describing the two major luminaries, and that is the moon and the sun. They both rise in the east and they set in the west, and depending on the season, is going to determine where on the eastern horizon they're going to be rising, where on the western horizon they're going to be setting. But meanwhile, they rise in the east and they set in the west. So as far as their relationship to one another, so they're going almost basically the same speed, but the sun is going faster. How much faster is the sun orbiting than the moon? So about 12 degrees a day. The sun is going faster than the moon. That means to say, the reason why I chose 12 degrees is because after 30 days, you guessed it, about a month, so about 30 days, so we're talking about 360 degrees, which means that in the month's time, the sun is going to be lapping the moon. So that means to say now that at the beginning of every month, so you have, or immediately before the beginning of every month, you have this point of conjunction where the earth and the sun and the moon are in perfect alignment. Where basically, again, from our perception, the sun and the moon are going to be now aligned. And because the moon now is only the backside of the moon is to us, the dark side of the moon is to us, so we won't be able to see the moon at all. Then shortly thereafter, the sun is going to be bypassing the moon. The moon is going to be, quote-unquote, behind the sun, and we are going to be able to see a sliver of the moon. So again, how much time needs to elapse in order for us to be able to see the beginnings of the moon? So from Rashi, over the course of this upcoming daf, it seems like it's going to be 6 hours. Doesn't seem like. Rashi says it's going to be 6 hours. 6 hours in terms of how much distance there is between sun and moon. By 6 hours, it's not a lot. As we already pointed out, there is about 12 degrees of separation that's created over the course of one day. 6 hours is a quarter of a day. So we're talking now about 3 degrees separation between the moon and the sun. So it is a little difficult to imagine that already at 3 degrees separation, we're going to be able to see any part of the moon whatsoever, any lit portion of the moon, but that's what Rashi says, and that's obviously going to become evident from the words of the Gemara itself. Okay. As I point out in the past, the challenges of a daf like this is, number one, you have to know the basic astronomy, which we're explaining right now, and then you have to fit it into the Gemara. That second part is a lot more challenging. A lot of credit goes to the art school Gemaras, where they spend a lot of time working on the second part, meaning taking all this information that we know and plugging it into the Gemara and plugging it into Rashi, and that's why you're going to be seeing a lot of ink spilled in terms of trying to explain exactly how to understand the Gemara and how to understand Rashi. We are going to go through a very basic understanding of the Gemara, and I'm not even going to do much in terms of touching Rashi, but we're certainly going to get a much clearer picture of what's being described over here. So far we described the basic patterns of the sun and the moon, and the sun relative to the moon, and the way that the sun goes ahead and orbits just a little bit faster than the moon. And with all that stated, now we can go to the Gemara, and we can gain some basic understandings from the Gemara itself. Kisalak Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera goes up, and Shalach Lehu, and he sends the following, Sarach Shehei Laila V'yom Min HaChodesh or Min HaChadash. So you need both night and day from the new moon. That means to say is that there is no way, it would simply be impossible to have seen the old moon on the previous night, and then to see the new moon of the next month anytime within that day, within that halachic day. Meaning that if the old moon was witnessed on the previous night, so it would simply be impossible to see the new moon by the next day. In other words, what we would need is that we would need to go through the point of the mola, we would need to go through conjunction, and we would need to be on the other side, and all that's not going to be happening in the course of one day. Rashi does state over here that with the witnessing of the old moon on the previous night, and that that generates a lot of discussion and a lot of an attempt to clarify, because there's no way we're going to be seeing an old moon on the previous night. The old moon is not visible at night. The old moon is only visible in the morning. Anyway, there's much to discuss over there, but we're, in the meantime, we're just simply going to go on. Vizusha Amar Abba Avur, the Rebbe Simai Mechashon, as told us so. Nolan Kon Chatzos Biadush Nira Samach Lishkiyas Achama. Lo Nolan Kon Chatzos Biadush Lo Nira Samach Lishkiyas Achama. And then we're going to go back to what we quoted yesterday from the Soda Ibur. We quoted yesterday from the Soda Ibur this idea of whether the Molad is before Chatzos or after Chatzos. Now, what does that mean? If the Molad is before Chatzos, there is a chance, at least a possibility, that we could see the new moon before sunset. If, however, the Molad was after Chatzos, then there's no way we're able to see the new moon after the new moon before sunset. And it's based on, as I mentioned previously, Rashi's assumption, and again, it's just a simple reading of our Gemara, that there is a chance after Molad to see the new moon about 6 hours after the Molad. So that means to say that at the point of conjunction, obviously there's no way we can see the moon, because the moon is in perfect alignment with the sun. But if you 6 hours later, where now there's 3 degrees separation between the moon and the sun, so it's at that point in time that at least there's a chance, there's a possibility that you could see the new moon. So if the Molad is before Chatzos, which gives us more than 6 hours until sunset, of course we're assuming on it's a perfect day where there are 6 hours remaining, so then there is a chance, there is a possibility that one would be able to see the new moon prior to sunset. If, however, the Molad was after Chatzos, then there simply is no chance. Lamai Nafkamina, the Gemara wants to know, why is this significant information? Meaning, if everything is just a predicate of whether we saw the moon or we didn't see the moon, so why is it so important to know when the Molad was? So the Gemara says, Amar Ravashi l'achushe sahadeh. So Ravashi's response is, because now we'll know whether or not witnesses are telling the truth. Meaning, we are now armed with the information of when the Molad is. We always know when the Molad is. And now when witnesses come and testify to have seen the new moon, so once we know when the Molad is, so we'll know whether or not there's any grounds whatsoever for there to be even a possibility that the witnesses saw the new moon. So that's why this information is important. Continuing in the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Nachman, Chaf Dalisha, Mechasi Siara. So the moon is going to be out of visibility for 24 hours, meaning that there is going to be a 24-hour period of time from the departure of the old moon, meaning as the old moon now is approaching conjunction to the point of conjunction, to the point of post-conjunction. So for that whole period of time is 24 hours. Now, even though the Gemara says it's 24 hours where the moon is out of visibility, it's not really 24 hours. In other words, it really is 18 hours, but it depends geographically where you are. Lidi done for us, meaning here in Bavel, Shis Mi'atikta, it's going to be 6 of the old moon and 18 of the new moon. And Lididu, and for them, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, Shis Mecharata, 6 of the new moon, and Matam Nisrei Me'atika, and 18 of the old moon. And basically, this is where the Gemara gets a little bit challenging to understand. But basically, what the Gemara says is that it depends geographically where you are, but there is a chance to see the new moon 6 hours after the Molad. Basically, what we said earlier, it's just going to be a function. It's going to depend on whether you're living above or whether you're living in Eretz Yisrael. Admittedly, this part of the Gemara presents itself to be a tremendous challenge. The way Rashi presents it, this is all going to be a question of when we're able to see the new moon post-conjunction. And the Gemara is saying that it's going to be a function of where you are geographically. Ostensibly, at the simplest, at its simple face value, it really shouldn't matter where you are geographically, meaning the witnessing of the new moon should be a constant at any point in time, at any place you are in the earth, at the point of post-conjunction. So admittedly, this part of the Gemara is really hard. See Rashi over here, and if you're adventurous, the art school spends a lot of time, I took a look at it, spends a lot of time trying to go ahead and explain how Rashi's approach works based on what we know. Anyway, but we're going to go on. L'may nafkamina, the Gemara wants to know, how has this become practical for us? Amar Rav Ashi l'achushe sahadeh. So the Gemara says again, because once you're armed with this information, once you know when the Molad is and where you are geographically, so you know as to whether or not there's even a possibility that the witnesses saw the moon, and that's why all this information becomes significant. Amar Mar Tzorch Shiei Laila V'yomina Chodesh. Now, we said previously that there is no way to see the old moon from the night prior. and to see the new moon by the end of the day, meaning that the only way we're going to be seeing the new moon sometime this day is only if there wasn't an old moon from the previous night. Now, Minalan, how do I know this is in fact so? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Me'erev Ad Erev, Reish Lakish Amar Ad Yom Ha'Echad Ve'Esrim L'Chodesh, Ba'Erev. So the Amoraim are quoting different psukim. So Rabbi Yochanan quotes Me'erev Ad Erev, that's a reference to Yom Kippur, and Reish Lakish is quoting Ad Yom Ha'Echad Ve'Esrim L'Chodesh, Ba'Erev, that's a reference to Pesach, Ma'i Binayu. Now, they're both quoting different psukim, but seemingly to get to the same point. Is there a nafkamina between which pasuk they're quoting? So Abai Amar Mishmash Mos Darshim Iga Bainahu. So Abai says, no, there's no nafkamina. It's just a question of which pasuk is speaking more to this idea, but that's it. There's no practical difference between these positions. Rava Amar Chatzos Laila Iga Bainahu. Rava says, no, the difference between them is Chatzos Laila is whether or not we're counting from nightfall or we're counting from midnight. Meaning, if I'm learning from Yom Kippur, so we're counting already from nightfall, because obviously Yom Kippur begins at nightfall. If, however, we're learning it from Pesach, so it could very well be that we're not talking about from nightfall, but rather we're talking about from midnight. What's the significance of midnight in Pesach? So we've seen this already a number of times back in Pesachim, and that is the idea that on the first night of Pesach there's an obligation to eat matzah, but that obligation to eat matzah only goes till Chatzos, only goes to midnight. After midnight, there's no longer an obligation to eat matzah, but rather after midnight, it's only a rishus, it's only optional. Granted, by the way, just mentioned parenthetically, this is subject to a machlokas tanaim, that we saw at the end of the Gemara in Pesachim, but obviously we're working with the position that there's no longer an obligation post-midnight. So anyway, so if that's true, and you're learning it now from the pasuk regarding Pesach, so it could very well be that the idea that the moon has to be already from the beginning of the evening. It doesn't actually mean the beginning of the evening. It means actually from midnight, which basically is another way of describing 18 hours. In other words, that you only need 18 hours of the new moon and not a full 24 hours. Okay. Amar Abizera, Amar Rav Nachman Kol Sveika L'Kamish Adinan. Okay, so we're going to leave the world of the discussion of the Molad and the moon, and we're going to backtrack now. We're going to go back to Sveika D'Yuma. So as we know, because the Rosh Chodesh is not a constant, and it's a variable, and it really depends on when Beis Din is going to be Mekashas HaChodesh. So we know that living out in the Golos, so were you not equipped with the knowledge of when Beis Din is going to be Mekashas HaChodesh, so now one has to observe not one, but two different days, because there are two possible days in which could end up becoming the first day of Pesach, the first day of Sukkot, etc., etc. So now the Gemara wants to know that in terms of Sveika D'Yoma, so which days are accounted for Sveika D'Yoma? So we already know the answer because we observe a 2-day Yontif here, so we already know it's going to be the 15th and 16th, but the Gemara here is now going to be discussing it straight out. So Amar Abizera, Amar Rav Nachman Kol Sveika L'Kamish Adinan. So any suffix is going to go L'Kame, which means that we are going to be observing the 15th day of Nisan as the first day of Pesach, and the following day, meaning the 16th. And lememer dechamis v'shitzar abdina arbas elo abdina. And the Gemara says, and as Rashi points out over here, this is just a continuation of the sentence. This is not a challenge. And the Gemara says that that means to say that we are looking here at the 15th and 16th. We are not looking at the 14th. So the Gemara wants to know, why don't we look at the 14th? The Gemara asks the question, v'le'avinami arbeisar. Dilma chasru la ave chasru la elo. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we take the following into consideration? Maybe the 14th really is another day which could in fact have been the first day of Yontif. The Gemara here, I give the example of Pesach, the Gemara is giving the example of Sukkot. It comes out to be the same point, which is that couldn't it have been a scenario in which Av was a chaser and Elo was a chaser as well? So if Av and Elo are a chaser, and again, the people in the Golos do not know this, so it could very well be that now we are not one but 2 months of chaser consecutively. And so now the day that we think, because we were operating with the assumption that they alternate between the two, but the day that we think is the 14th really now turns out to be the 15th. So now under those circumstances, can't we or shouldn't we now observe the 14th as another possibility of being the 15th? So the Gemara says, no. Because if in fact two consecutive months were made into a chaser, The Gemara says that's really shocking information, and everybody would find out about it. There's no way that that would have happened, and that wouldn't have created a ripple effect in the Jewish community. Everyone would know about it, and so that's something that we simply don't have to entertain. Gemara continues. We're on the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, Leidi Ikla Lebavo V'Chatzer B'Tishrei. So the Gemara now is going to tell two stories consecutive back to back. Quite frankly, they're going to be somewhat of a shocking story, and there are going to be a number of issues which need clarification, but I'm just going to read the Gemara Kipshuta. So Levi comes to Bavel on what the B'nai Bavel think is the 11th day of Tishrei. Amar, now he says, and I'll add sarcastically, Basim Tafshila de Bavlai B'yuma Rabba de Ma'arava. So how's the food tasting on this day in which Eretz Yisrael believes is Yom Kippur? So that means to say that in Eretz Yisrael, here's what happened. So they were Ma'aber Elul. Now, as we have already gone over numerous times, being Ma'aber Elul is something that is a rarity. Elul was a chaser for the most part. And only on a number of very rare exceptions did they make Elul into a Malay, into a 30-day month as opposed to a 29-day month. And that's what happened this particular year. And in Bavel, they assumed that Rosh Hashanah was the 30th day of the previous month, meaning Elul was only 29 days. And then they assumed, of course, that 10 days later, after what they deemed Rosh Hashanah, so they observed Yom Kippur. Meanwhile, in Eretz Yisrael, so they pushed off Rosh Chodesh by one day. And so now, what Levi wants to know to the, and he's asking the B'nai Bavel is, how's that food tasting on what is really Yom Kippur? So, obviously, a lot of issues that need clarification, which we're not going to do, but just, I understand that there's a lot of basic questions that one can ask. Where did Levi come from? Why didn't Levi give this information any earlier? How did he travel from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel? on the day that he believed to be Yom Kippur? Okay, so obviously, there is a lot of clarification that's needed over here. But in the meantime, however, so right now we're just looking at a really awkward scenario where everyone in Bavel thinks it's the 11th, and now a correction has come about that it's not the 11th day of Tishrei, but rather it's the 10th day of Tishrei. It's Yom Kippur. So Amri Leh, so they say to Levi, Asid. So do us a favor, testify. Meaning at this point in time, we are totally ready and committed to accept upon ourselves that today's Yom Kippur, we're ready to stop eating right away. So would you in fact testify that this is so? Amr Lahu, and his response is, Lo Shamati Mipi Beis Din Mekudesh. No, I'm not ready to testify. I didn't hear from Beis Din. And because I didn't hear from Beis Din, so as a result of that, I'm not prepared to make this statement official. Okay, now at this point in time, the Gemara moves on to the next story. So again, we're left with a lot of open-ended questions, meaning what happened? Did they stop eating? What was Levi's consideration? If he couldn't actually formally declare that today to be Yom Kippur, so why would he say anything to begin with? So I'm totally recognizing the fact that there are a lot of open-ended questions over here. We're going to go on in the Gemara. Machris Rav Yochanan kol hech demastu shluche nisam v'lamastu shluche tishrei le'avitrei yuma gazvina nisam natu tishrei. Okay. So the Gemara quotes now the following gzera that Rav Yochanan announced. So he announced it. It sounds like he is the one who began the gzera. But that part I'm not sure about, but the Gzera basically goes like this. Okay, so just as a brief introduction to the Gzera, so just to review what we already know, that after Beis Din declares whatever day to be Rosh Chodesh, so the Shulchan will go out. Now, when the Shulchan go out to disseminate the information, so as we have already discussed numerous times, so they're not going to be Mechal Shabbos. So now, when Beis Din establishes when the first day of Nisan is, so that's it. So from that point going forward, the Shulchan go out. And the same thing is true now with Tishrei. Once Beis Din determines when the first day of Tishrei is, Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Hashanah, so then the Shluchim are going to go out. Shluchim cannot travel on Shabbos. Shluchim cannot travel on Yontif. How much time do they have to travel in the month of Nisan? So the answer is a good number of days. Meaning basically from when Beis Din declares it to be Rosh Chodesh, that day, and all days, with notable exception to either the one or two Shabbosim that come before Pesach. Good. But outside of that, they can travel any one of those days. It could be as many as 14 days. Well, we'll take a knock out of the Shabbos, 13 days. But anyway, the point is that they could be traveling every day of the beginning of Nisan, with exception to the one or two Shabbosim that are there. Good. Now let's do the same thing with Tishrei. So in Tishrei, so how much time do the Shluchim have to go? So the answer is not as much time. Because again, they can't travel on Shabbos, nor can they travel on Yontif as well. So already the first day, meaning the Rosh Chodesh of Tishrei, they can't travel, that's Rosh Hashanah. So they can only start traveling on day number two, or the eve of day number two. Okay. And now Yom Kippur, they're not allowed to travel. And now also the Shabbosim, they're not allowed to travel. So already they're going to have a more limited distance in terms of where they can travel in the month of Tishrei. Okay. Now I'm going to throw out numbers just to try to be as clear as possible in terms of explaining the Gemara. So let's say that in Nisan, given the number of days, the maximum number of days they could travel. So let's say that in Nisan, they can travel a total distance of 250 miles. A made up number. I'm just trying to make a point. And let's say in the month of Tishrei, they can only travel a total of 200 miles. Again, made up number, just to make a point. So that means to say now that there is a couple of communities anywhere between the 200 to 250 mile range, which are going to be learning about Beis Din's Kiddush HaChodesh in Nisan, but will not know about it in Tishrei. And so Rav Yochanan says, so given that these communities are only getting the information half the time, so Gzeira D'Rabbanan, they're always going to have to observe 2 day Yontifs. These communities that are living anywhere between the 200 to 250 mile radius, so because they're not getting the correct information all the time, so as Gzeira D'Rabbanan, they have to observe 2 day Yontifs. Okay, that's the Gzeira of Rabbi Yochanan. And the reason is very simple. In other words, to make things as uncomplicated as possible, if some of the time they're observing 1 day, some of the time they're observing 2 days, it is simply too complicated, and therefore to keep it streamlined, always 2 days. Gemara follows this up with a story. Rabbi Aibabar, Nagrev Rabbi Chiyabar, Abba Iklulahu Asra Dahava, Matu Shulche Nisim La Matu Shulche Tishrei. So these two Amorim got to a community where this community was perfectly in the middle, like we just described, somewhere between the 200 to 250 range. So, the on the Nisan Yantav, otherwise known as Pesach, so they observed 1 day, because they felt that, look, we got the good information. So, Shamar Rav Yochanan Be'ikbid, Amrlu Lav Amrei Lechu, Heichad Amat Shuch Nisan, V'lo Amat Shuch Tishrei, Le'avdu Trey Yuma, Gzera Nisan Atu Tishrei. And Rav Yochanan was upset. He said, look, I made a Gzera, and the Gezera was to standardize and to make everything uniform. And the fact of the matter is that if they're not receiving this information year round, so therefore they should be observing 2 days of Yantav, 2 days of Yantav. Okay. And he was upset with the community. And presumably also upset with his Talmidim for not saying anything. Rava Habaragel da Havayasi Batanisa Treyumai. Rava took upon himself a Chumrah in which he would fast 2 consecutive days for Yom Kippur. Now, what is understood, although the Gemara doesn't really spell this out, but it certainly seems to be understood, is that we don't observe 2 days of Yom Kippur, even though we just gone over there's something called Sfeika D'Yuma, and communities who are not receiving the information when Rosh Chodesh is will be observing 2 days of Yantiv. However, this wouldn't be true for Yom Kippur. And for obvious reasons, for 2 days of 2 consecutive days of Yom Kippur, that would be 48 hours of fasting. And that's just simply too much to ask for from Klal Yisrael. So the Chachamim said, look, that for Rosh Hashanah, we'll go back to that Rashi that we read back a couple days ago, where for Rosh Hashanah, they observe 1 day. Again, that's not the minhag nowadays, but back in the day, they observed Rosh Hashanah for 1 day because of the majority of the time, Elul was a chaser. And so presumably, they say they would do the same thing for Yom Kippur as well, meaning that although it'd be better to know with more authority, but for Yom Kippur, we're going to be observing the 1 day of Yom Kippur just simply because the majority of the time Rosh Chodesh does come out in the first day of, the Elul is a Chaser. Rosh Chodesh comes out on the 30th of the month and we'll just operate with a Rov. And we will not ask people to observe 2 days of Yom Kippur. Good. That's all the background. And Rava takes upon himself as a personal chumrah that he's going to be observing 2 days of Yom Kippur. And Zimna Chadishtaka Chavasei. And then the Gemara throws in one line, which is, ended up 1 year that it worked, meaning that he's doing all this in the event that the basin is Ma'aber Elo. It happened 1 year that basin was Ma'aber Elo. And he was validated now for observing this personal chumrah. Rav Nachman Yasub Batani Sekul Yom Adikipura. The Gemara tells one more story where Rav Nachman is in a fast day on Yom Kippur, and Lo Ursa Asu Hahu Gavra. Now, Motzei Yom Kippur, a person comes over. Again, I know, like we could have asked earlier, like, where's this person coming from? How is this person knowing this information? But anyway, the person comes, and Amar Leh, Lamachar Yom Rabba, Mama Rava. And he informs Rav Nachman that, you know, Today wasn't Yom Kippur. Today was the ninth day of Tishrei. Again, there was a year, and just it could have been the same year that we described earlier. But regardless, there was a year where Beis Din was Ma'abir Elul, and now everything was pushed off one day. And he had the unfortunate position where he had to inform Rav Nachman that the day that Rav Nachman just fasted the whole day, vis-a-vis Yom Kippur, wasn't Yom Kippur. It was just simply Erev Yom Kippur. So Amar Leh Meheicha At. So he says, where are you from? Rav Nachman now asks the informer, where are you from? So Amar Leh Mi Dam Harya. So he says, I'm from the town of Dam Harya. We heard of this town before. So Amar Leh Dam Teach Riso. So Rav Nachman now uses a name of his location in order to curse this individual. It goes without saying Rav Nachman was extremely unhappy with the person and the news that this person brought. Kari Alei, for the Pasuk, Kalim Hayu Rodefenu, that his enemy should come upon him quickly. Okay, Pasuk Anecha. And it sounds like Kipshuta of the Gemara, it sounds like Rav Nachman is cursing this individual. And again, just not enough information to properly assess, was the person giving this information to Rav Nachman for positive and productive purposes? Was he not supposed to tell Rav Nachman? Again, a lot of unanswered questions in terms of the dynamics of what should have been done, what shouldn't have been done. But clearly, Rav Nachman, for just simple, understandable reasons, was really unhappy with the person who was sharing this information. We continue. Shalach le Rav Huna bar Avin le Rava. Karchazis demashka tukufas teves ad chitzar b'nitzan. So let's say now you see that the winter season, and when I say the winter season, I mean that from a solar calendar, right? What we call the winter, meaning that starts with the it starts with the winter solstice and ends in the vernal equinox, winter. So if winter now is encroaching all the way to the 16th day of Nisan, so that's the year in order to be ma'abrishan, in order to add another adar. Abru la'ishasav lo tachushla. Don't worry whatsoever. Dichsiv the pasuk says shmor chodesh aviv, shmor aviv shel tkufa shebechodesh Nisan. That the springtime has to be bechodesh Nisan, has to be in the month of Nisan. And so that means to say that you don't have to start Nisan with the springtime, but there has to be at least a significant part of Nisan where it follows in the springtime. Right, let's take this year for example. This year is an Iber year. So this year, had we not added another Adar, so Pesach would be coming out before the vernal equinox, and that's not good. Meaning, it's basically Pesach is in the winter. And so, what's done this year? Again, we're operating with a fixed calendar, but all this was taken into consideration when the calendar got fixed. So the idea over here is that we'll add another Adar, and now Pesach will come out actually in the springtime. Amalu Rav Nachman Lanu Nechusa Yama. So one last point now to make regarding the timing of the moon and the sun. So Rav Nachman says to the people who are out on the ships, Asim the Lo Yidisa Bikviti Yarcha. So you're not going to have information in terms of when Rosh Chodesh is. So Ki Chazisu Sihara. Demashlam leyuma bi'aru chamira. So he says, you know when you're going to do bir chametz? So you'll follow the moon, and the moon is going to tell you when exactly to do bir chametz. Okay, again, just let's give a brief explanation of what's going on over here, so that we understand how the moon can inform in terms of when to do bir chametz. So as we already pointed out, so the sun and the moon are going east to west every day. We also pointed out that the sun is going at a faster rate. We already pointed out that the sun is moving about 12 degrees faster. Okay, so that means to say that as the month progresses, so the sun's going to be going further and further ahead of the moon, and eventually by the end of the month, the sun is going to lap the moon. But in the meantime, however, where are we at the midpoint of the month? So right around the 14th of the month. So as the sun is setting, the moon is rising. Or if you want, we could just flip that around. As the moon is setting, so the sun is rising. So when and we can call that astronomically, we can call that the point of opposition, meaning it's the opposite of conjunction. Conjunction is when you have in order the sun, the moon, the earth. So opposition is where you have the sun, the earth, and the moon in alignment. Anyway, so at that point in time, so the Gemara's assumption is that what Rav Nachman is telling the people on the boat is that when you're out there in the sea and you see this phenomenon, meaning you're seeing that as the sun is rising, the moon is setting. Ah, so now that's the 14th day of the month. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Emas mashal mechamisa. So the Gemara says, isn't that the 15th day of the month? So the Gemara says, and that's not good because we want Bir Chamish to be done on the 14th, on the 15th. In fact, the 15th would simply be too late. That's the first day of Pesach. So the Gemara says, Lidi du demagli luama me'arbaase mashlam. So the Gemara says, now, for the people out in the ocean, so their horizon is the purest horizon that one can imagine. Meaning that for the rest of us who are on land, so our horizon is not the actual edge of the horizon, but we have trees, mountains. In other words, we have a little bit of we have a little bit of addition to the horizon, in which now the moon makes its way over the horizon. So it's at this point in it's at this additional horizon that we have that makes this phenomenon occur not on the 14th, but rather on the 15th. However, out in the ocean where there is nothing obstructing, so now when you see the moon setting and the sun rising, so it's at that point in time that's actually going to be the 14th, not the 15th. Okay, Adkan. Okay, that takes us now through the first part of today's daf, and hopefully with some better understanding in terms of the dynamics of the sun, the moon, and the discussion regarding how to handle Sveika Diyuma. We're now in Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, and we're continuing now with the Mishnah, Shnei Chadashim, Mechal Nesah Shabbos. So there are 2 months where there's going to be Chol Shabbos. The Eidim coming to the Beis Din to testify about the new month are going to be doing so for 2 of the 12 months. Al Nisan Val Tishrei, for the month of Nisan and Tishrei, Shabbat and Shluchim Yosem L'Suria, because that's when the Shluchim go out to Suria, Vehem Misaknes and Moados, and all the Moados are going to be contingent on those months. Now, when there was a Beis Hamikdash Mechal al Kulan, so Chilul Shabbos for the Eidim would be done on all 12 months, Mimnei Tekanas HaKarban, because obviously that's when the carbon is being brought. The Gemara's discussion right away is that we are confused, meaning this Mishnah over here says that for 2 months they're significant. Meanwhile, al Beis Chadashim Besulam v'Reminu, Avav Chadashim Ashluchim Yotzim. Go back to a previous Mishnah. In the previous Mishnah, we talked about how 6 months, the Shluchim would go out and disseminate the information. So we were talking about the significance of 6 months previously. And over here in our Mishnah, we're talking about the significance of 2 months and only 2 months. So Amar Abayi. So Abayi says, okay, let's give a quick clarification. And that is Hachi Kama. Al Kulam Shluchim Yotzim Mi Be'erev. So when it comes to all the months mentioned previously, so the 6 significant months in which the Shluchim go out. So when do they go out? They go out mi-be'erev. Now that means as follows, and everything I'm saying over here is Rashi. I'm just simply paraphrasing. And that is that the when we know that Beis Din is going to be Mekadesh the month. So let's say, for example, there are a number of different examples in which we know which day Beis Din is going to be Mekadesh the month. So a simplest example would be is that they weren't Mekadesh on the 30th day, but rather they were Mekadesh on the 31st day. Ah. So under those circumstances, so now, when do the Shluchim go out? So the answer is that for all the other months, except for Nisan and Tishrei, so the Shluchim are going to go out the night prior. Well, they don't have to wait till the next day. They don't have to wait until Beis Din actually declares the month to be Rosh Chodesh, because they know simply that there's no other alternative. They know the next day is going to be Rosh Chodesh. So they can go out the night prior. But Rashi points out even more than that, meaning for all the other months, even if it's, let's say, the 30th day, but the new moon is clear and visible to everybody. In other words, it's pretty obvious now that Beis Din is going to be Mekadesh this day to be Rosh Chodesh. So even then, the Shluchim can get a jump start, and they can already travel out the night prior. Good. That's by all other months. However, on Nisan Mal Tishrei, Ashish Mumipi Beis Din Mekudash. But when it comes to Nisan and Tishrei, so we tell the Shluchim, you cannot go out until you actually hear Beis Din saying that the month is Mekudesh. Now, why is it? So, actually, really simple. The Mishnah told us why. Because it's for these months that all the Yontifs are going to be telling on these months. So the mitzvah of Pesach, the Isser of Chametz, the mitzvah of Yeshiva Besukha, etc., etc., etc. So since all the Yontifs, and even Shavuos as well, because Shavuos obviously is a function of Pesach. So since all the Yontifs now are going to be contingent on the establishment of Rosh Chodesh Nisan and Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, So we don't want to make any assumptions, and the shluchim are only going to go out only at the point when Beis Din is actually going to be mekadesh. Being that that's the case, now this next part is a little bit tricky, and you can see Rashi over here spends a lot of time in explaining this point, but I'll try to be succinct about it. Being that that's the case, being that for the months of Nisan and Tishrei, the only time the shulchan can go out is only going to be under the circumstances where Beis Din actually is mekadesh chodesh. So that means to say that the shluchim now are going to be tied, locked, to only a point in time where Beis Din is going to be mekadesh chodesh. Being that that's the case, so now Edim are now given the entitlement, the ability to go ahead and to be mechalal Shabbos for these 2 months. Being that the testimony of the Edim and the sanctification of the months are the only things that are going to allow the Shluchim to go out. So therefore, the Edim are given the permission and the right to be Mechal Shabbos, if in fact, obviously, they saw the new month, to go to Beis Din and to testify on Shabbos. So because of this distinction, this difference between Shluchim by all the other months and Shluchim by Nisan and Tishrei, so therefore Edim have the ability to be Mechal Shabbos for the month of Nisan and Tishrei. And now the Gemara is just simply going to quote brises that support this. Tanu Rabbanan, we've learned in a brisa. Minan shemechal na'alein as a Shabbos. How do I know that Chilul Shabbos is allowed for Kiddush HaChodesh? Tanu Lomar Eile Mo'adah, Shem Asher Tekuro Sam Ben Mo'adam. So Ben Mo'adam tells me that it could be, it needs to be done in its proper time, even if it results in Chilul Shabbos. Now, Yachul Kishem shemechal na'ad shiz kachu, kach mechal na'ad shiz kaimu. So once we know that Chilul Shabbos can be done for sanctifying the new month, so maybe Chilul Shabbos can be done even for disseminating the information. No, Chilul Shabbos is only for establishing Rosh Chodesh, but in terms of disseminating the information, there can be no Chilul Shabbos. We're just finishing up now to the Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan, we'll learn to Nebraisa. So here in the Braisa, it's basically what we saw in our Mishnah, and that is that when there was a Beis HaMikdash and there was a Karban Musaf for Rosh Chodesh, so then an allowance was given for Chilul Shabbos for every institution of Rosh Chodesh. However, post Korban Beis HaMikdash, one of the Takanas of Rav Yochanan Zakkai, later in this Masechta, we're going to go over a number of Takanas of Rav Yochanan Zakkai, but one of the Takanas is that after Churban Beis HaMikdash, so the only month that the Edim could be Mechal Shabbos is only for the month of Nisan and for Tishrei. And again, as we learned earlier, just moments earlier, and that really is going to be a predicate of the fact that the Shluchim cannot go out until they actually hear Beis Din being Mekadesh HaChodesh. Okay. Tomorrow we start with the Mishnah. In the meantime, however, we get a chance, an opportunity to review the Daf. So just a quick review of, honestly, what was a pretty challenging Daf. We started on Chaf Amud Beis, and we went through a number of statements of Rabbi Zeira regarding the nature of Molad of conjunction, and some of the features that feature prominently with the Molad. Notably, when could we see the new moon post-Molad? How long is going to be the period of time from the disappearance of the old moon and the appearance of the new moon? Maybe it's going to be a function independent on where we are geographically. Anyway, it comes out from Rashi that the only first opportunity that anyone's going to be able to have to see the new moon after the Molad, after conjunction, is only going to be 6 hours. And that's not even true for everybody around the world, but it would be true, at least for some people within this world. That is Rashi's presentation, as we pointed out. Rashi certainly is challenging, but that's where we started off the daf. Then, on the bottom of Chaf Amud Beis, going well into Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, a question of Sveika Deyuma. Because the B'nai Galus are not knowledgeable of when Rosh Chodesh is, so they have to observe not one but 2 days of Yontif. So which 2 days of Yontif? The answer is the 15th and the 16th. The Gemara wants to know, why don't we also take the 14th into account? If you have two chasar months leading up to Nisan, or two chasr months leading up to Tishrei. So wouldn't that now require at least a consideration that the 14th could in fact be Yantav? The Gemara says, yeah, that's true, but if there are two chasr months back to back, so that's going to kala islahu, everyone's going to know about it, that information would spread. The Gemara had a couple more points to make regarding Sfeika Diyuma. Rav Yochanan's Gzera is that if I have the Shluchim who are unable to get to a particular location for both the month of Tishrei and the month of Nisan, so that community has to preserve a two-day Yantiv, even on the Yantiv in which they know is when Basin was Mekash Chodesh. Even though the Shluchim got there in the month of Nisan, but because they can't get there in the month of Tishrei, so therefore they're going to have to observe a two-day Yantiv for both the Nisan and the Tishrei Yamim Tovim. Good. The Gemara reported community didn't do that. Rav Yochanan was very upset with that community for not following that minhag. A couple of stories told regarding people informing the Bnei Bavel that the Yom Kippur is not Yom Kippur, but rather it's going to be the following day. And Rav Nachman was really upset about learning that information. And that's it. That's all the information the Gemara gives us. And then finally, two more points to summarize on the Amud Aleph. Number one is that if your winter is going into the month of Nisan, so far into the month of Nisan, already the 16th day of Nisan is still winter. So that's the time when you're ma'aper the Chodesh. Obviously, now with a fixed calendar, we have nothing to think about. But part of the formula that goes into that fixed calendar is that we're never going to have a situation where the 16th of Nisan is going to be within the winter season. And then the last thing we pointed out is that even in the absence of knowing when Rosh Chodesh is, so there are still ways to ascertain what's the 14th of the month, what's the 15th of the month, based on the relationship between the sun and the moon. And at the time where you see the moon is setting, so it's at that point in time you could assume that, while the sun is rising, so it's at that point in time you can assume it's the 14th of the month, although the Gemara says that really is true for people who are out in the ocean, who have nothing blocking their view of the horizon. On the Amud Beis today, so we talked about how Eidim are going to be Mechalal Shabbos in order to go to the basin, in order to testify, but only for the months of Nisan and Tishrei and for no other months. When there was a Beis HaMikdash, Chil Shabbos was necessary to be Mekadosh every month because of the Karban Musaf, but after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, so they would only go out for the months of Nisan and Tishrei. Why? So the Mishnah tells us why, because it's those months where all the Yom Tovim are connected to those two particular months. But for all other months, so they're not going to be Mechal Shabbos. Good? And then just the contrast of this Mishnah over here as opposed to the previous Mishnah, when we talked about how for 6 months the Shluchim will go out. So why over there for 6 months the Shluchim will go out, but only Eidim being Mechal Shabbos to testify about the months only for two of those 6 months? So the Gemara says because for these 2 months, since all the Yom Tovim are attached to them, and since the Shluchim cannot go out until they actually hear that Beis Din is Mekadosh HaChodesh, so therefore it's only for these 2 months alone is there going to be Chil Shabbos. Adkan.